Right, okay, welcome back to those of you who are here in the first half, and welcome to those of you who weren't. Microformats, the idea behind them is that we know what web pages are, and lots of people author web pages and display data on their websites. But that data at the moment generally doesn't tend to be computer understandable, which means it's very difficult to reuse the content from websites. So, an example, a website which advertises forthcoming The Expeditions might have a long list of dates and call signs and places. But how is a computer to know what's a date and what's a call sign and what's a place, unless you're using a standardised format for actually encoding this behind the scenes? And that's where microformats come in. And at the moment there are very, very few web browsers that can deal with microformats. Internet Explorer can't, Firefox only can with now. Sorry? IE can with a plugin, Firefox can with a plugin, but again, the user's got to know about these things to actually use them. But the forthcoming range of semantic web browsers, so no, will be able to deal with this data. We've actually been, in the last couple of months, launching microformats on the ISGD's IOTA website. So down there, anyway, we have a list of forthcoming activations of IOTA. Yeah, so you've got an activation here by CG3 for OK1JR of Africa 14 between the 3rd of October and 13th of October. Just saying that, a computer doesn't know normally what that is. But in this case I've got microformats. It's actually encoded in microformat. And you might see up here, there's another thing which is telling me that I've got 19 events on the page. There are 19 activations in the list. And because this is a semantic browser, I can click the events, it tells me what the events are, and gives me the option to, for example, export that event to Google Calendar. So straight away, if I have a Google Calendar account, if I'm interested in working that activation, click that button, and that the information from that activation goes straight into my diary without me having to actually do anything, not recopying it. I think this has great potential in our hobby, particularly for the likes of 45DX News, for example, DX News Sheet. If they were presenting on their web pages all the information they have in microformat, it would be very easy to reuse this. You could have even logging software able to read the web pages and extract the information from them. So if you have lists of values or anything on your website, please use microformats. Likewise, this is the particular activation that's been added to the IOTA website, and we have here the guy that said that it's QSL that is via OK1JN, and the site has then gone off to QRZ.com, talked to QRZ.com and fetched the address. Well, it's all very well to have it displayed on the website, but you're still going to have to copy it down to make use of it. Except again, this is in microformat. You see it now tells me I've got one contact on the page, and again it's offering to export that contact to an address book or whatever. The potential, why not have that export to a label printer to print out the label via QSL card printouts. So there's great potential with actually having web pages encoded in a way that computers can understand. But to get very much further, we need amateur radio websites to release their data to developers in suitable formats. Principally the XML format, which is the de facto standard. I can tell you at this point that we're trying to go this way in IOTA. Hopefully by the end of this year it will be possible to for software developers to look up activation data that we've got stored to find out what's coming on in the future. So again, logging software could alert you that such as that you need this island and it's going to be on between these dates. And without actually you going to the IOTA website, your logging software could potentially tell you that. Going forward, we also hopefully in the near future, release the IOTA listings. Initially, that will probably be in an XML format for software developers, who until now have never before had an official IOTA list, and then eventually may make it available in other formats as well. But we really need the main amateur radio data format, logging, well, data type, which is log data, to be in a decent format, which is where XDIF comes in. Log book data then is the basic data type of amateur radio, but neither Caprillo nor ADIF, which are de facto standards, are really suitable for web applications. They're not XML compliant. If we were to adopt a new logging format, which is able to be used with web applications, that's what we need before we can actually take advantage of all of these web technologies that I've been talking about so far. So, a little thought, maybe in the future, you'll type in the call sign of the person you're working, or maybe, you know, it could even come directly from the rig, thanks to a digital header or something, telling you who you're talking to, and see a picture of them, and their address, and their location, and then, because it's got your location, it can go and tell you what the weather's like at the person you're talking to address. No reason we actually can't do that right now, but we need the data to be there to do it with. So, I've mentioned, and Mike's mentioned, and Pete's mentioned XML a few times. XML is the standard for data interchange over the internet. It's very, very flexible in its principle. It basically is a grammar, and then you can create your own vocabulary, providing it matches that grammar, it'll work. So, the basic principle is you say what type of document it is, then you have a start of the document and an end of the document, you have a start of something, and then you have something else inside it, and then that thing closes, and then that thing closes. So it's you start something, you close it, you start something, you close it, and you can have other tags then in between. That's the basic principle of XML, and you can basically say anything you like, and it will still be XML compliant. So, XDIF is a draft specification. I've highlighted that word draft. For the next half hour or so, I'm going to be merrily talking as if it's standard already, it's already working. It's not. It's far from complete. And we need lots of input from people who've got ideas about how we can make it more useful. It's got some flaws at the moment, but we're working on it. And we really think that this is going to be absolutely necessary for us, and you'll see why later. So, what's an XDIF file look like? I'm assuming that you're all reasonably aware of what an ADIF file looks like behind the scenes. You've probably all looked at one. XDIF is very different. You have three sections to an XDIF file. First of all, you've got your definitions, which define what your shack is like. Where it is, what equipment you've got in your shack, principally. You then have the My section, which is divided into two further things. Things about you, the operator, what your name is, and what your call sign is, principally. And then location information, where your shack is, and the address of the shack, things like that. And then you have the QSOs. So you've got three distinct sections to the ADIF file. So, we start off by saying that this is a log. And then we have to start the definitions bit. It starts here, and then it's down here. Definitions. And we have, in this case, we've defined two separate types of shack. We've given them the names shack and mobile. And in the shack, we've got a dipole, an FT1000 MP, and we're running 100 watts. In the mobile, we've got a WIP antenna, IC706, we're running 10 watts. Okay, so we've got two distinct sets of equipment, which we can use. The idea is, in a moment, we'll be linking our QSOs back to these equipment sets. So we've given different IDs, though, to these different types of equipment. Next thing I said that we have is this My section, and the first bit of the My section is the Control section. In the Control we're saying call sign, name, web page, address, email address, telephone number, all that sort of stuff. And also, just as what Mike was saying earlier, some people like to sort of track their club membership, look at what clubs people are in. Again, you've got the ability to add clubs, and also sort of membership numbers as well is specified. So this is a global thing for the operator of every single QSO in the log. Now, of course, some people will have multi-operator logs. In that case, we don't define this right at the beginning of the file. We wait and do it on a QSO-by-QSO basis. Second part of the my section was the location. Imagine that should be fairly self-explanatory. CQ zone, ITU zone, grid squares, latitude and longitudes, and things like that. So you've got a set of information, again, defining where the station is for every QSO in the log. Again, if you've got QSOs in the log which have multiple locations, you can give this location information on a QSO-by-QSO basis rather than defining it at the top of the file. So that's our two initial sections. We've done the definitions and we've done the my section. So now we come on to the QSO section. And again, the QSOs are subdivided. We've got a my section, which explains anything about the operator or the station that you've used, which is different from the one you've defined further up the file. Information about the operators, the other stations, call time, location, name, things like that. And then the actual data referring to the QSO, the band of overtime, things that we're used to. Start off by saying this is the QSO's section, and then for each QSO we have a my section, which will either say use the type set of equipment that we've defined further up the file as being shack, or alternatively it creates a new definition for the shack. Then we've got the OM section, which says about the other station we're talking to, their call sign, their location, as much information as we can find about them. And then the standard stuff, the VAN, the frequency, the mode, and you notice XDIP as well uses the emission code, as well as the standard SSD code, CW height. And the beginning and ending times for the QSO in the international standard authorization format for times. So that, all of that stuff repeated for every single QSO in the log. Difficult concept to get across, but you should see that XDIP therefore is very different from ADIP. It did start out as rewriting ADIP as XML. It's sort of expanded as people have found other things they want to include and want to do with it. Why do we want to do this? Well, principally, as I hope that you've grasped already, it would be an awful lot easier to move XDIP files around the web. We can integrate, these are just examples, we can integrate a number of different services, and crucially, as it is at the moment, because ADIP is very messy basically, every programmer has to write their own ADIP parsing script. It takes weeks and weeks and weeks, and it's very difficult to do, and you always find one logging software which does things slightly differently because the ADIP standard is a bit flexible. So we really need to, once we've got an XML thing, because XML is the de facto standard on the web, every modern operating system knows how to deal with XML and understands what XML looks like. So it means that it saves an awful lot of work for the programmers. One of the strengths of XML is the fact that anybody can add any tags into it without actually changing it. So we've got a set of QSO information which is according to the XDIP format, let's say. But we all know that multiple award schemes and multiple contests all have their own slightly different requirements for the types of information they require. At the moment, ADIP can't cope with this. WAB, I don't think, has managed to persuade the ADIP community to add a tag, so there's no way of representing a WAB square in ADIP. And the same is true for multiple contests and award types. So we need something that's a lot more flexible, in other words. And XML, the X bit stands for extensible, so we have this capability. What we've got here, standard XDIP type that we've been referring to, except I've added in something at the beginning of the file. XMLNS stands for XML namespace. And what we're saying is, we're going to add extra sets of tags to this from a completely different specification that isn't XDIP. And you can find the specification for that, or you will be able to find the specification for that, at this address. And the computer can identify these extra tags we've added in by a prefix, which is iota. So we're actually still using XDIP as the language, if you like, but we're going to add to it from a separate language called iota. So this now enables me, when I define my location, I can add in from the iota vocabulary a set of iota tags that are specific to iota. In other words, rather than having to change the specification for new awards and contests in the future, what will happen is awards bodies and contest bodies will define their own tag sets, which they can then control. If they want to change the data types they're collecting, they can do that. But it won't upset the XDIP standard in any way, because the XML parser will just be able to import the vocabulary from the award body's website or the contest body's website. This was something I was thinking about a few months ago. And about the same time, the BBC launched this thing called bbc.co.uk/programs, which probably most people won't have seen because it's a rather techie thing, but it runs behind a lot of the things on the BBC website. The idea is that every series and episode of the series that the BBC is broadcasting, and in the future has ever broadcast, will have its own web page. So an example of, in this case, the Andrew Marr Show, the concept of the episode has its own address. An individual broadcast of that show, again, has its own address. And you can get the descriptions of the programmes as well for each individual episode of the series. These addresses, these unique identifiers for any given episode and any given episode is what got me thinking. And these identifiers are also used by iPlayer and things like that. So they do come into play in things that you might have used, but the techie side of it is sort of hidden away. The nice thing about this is the BBC is also releasing all this data as XML. So we have the episode listing as XML, and program listing and the episode list, and a schedule for the new genre as well as XML. And these addresses where we can find these XML listings are entirely predictable. It's all documented, and we can guess where we're going to find the data that we require for any BBC program. What's all this got to do with amateur radio? Well, I was wondering, what if we were to go down this route with XDIP data, assuming that XDIP data has already been defined? So the idea that I have been working on for the past few months is this idea that we can have a unique identifier that's predictable on the web for every single QSO in the logbook. So we can guess, if you want to get information about a QSO from my log, you can predict what the address is going to be, type that address in, or a computer can look up that web page and get the XDIP record for that QSO back. So give this URL and then add /N0BLF on the end, you get a listing of my latest QSOs. If you add /N0BLF/M3PHP, you get all my QSOs with Pete. You can add a date onto the end, or you can add sort of asterisks in place of unknown data and event type, so that will give me M0BLF talking to any person in August 2007 on any date in the YODX contest. So an entirely predictable way of accessing the information from my log. So, as I say, XML isn't particularly human readable. That's what you were looking at a moment ago. But web browsers have this thing called NextSLT engine inside them, where it can take this data and then take a template and then mix the two together inside the user's computer, what was my laptop was doing a moment ago, and then displaying the data that it's picked up. So it's taking the EXIF data, it's taking a template and displaying something that is looks like a normal web page at the end of it. Okay. So now we've got these QSO information at an entirely predictable address, and a computer can understand the information that's coming back, we can actually use existing technologies very easily to look up the data. In other words, writing a search a log search facility, for example, suddenly becomes trivial. So, again, an example. Last year I was on the Minkie Islands off Jersey. We've got a log search at the bottom of the page. And if I do a search for G3OCA, what's now going to happen is, without leaving this page, the website is going to go work out how to fit that into the predictable address for finding the QSO, where it thinks the QSO should be. If it gets back a set of data that's an EXIF format, it will then integrate it into this page. Thusly. And so we've got the QSOs have come straight back. But this I haven't had to do any particular special programming to do this. This is a standard web technology called Ajax. And because it's a predictable URL, XML format, the computer knows how to handle it. And likewise, well, there are two other advantages of doing it this way. First of all, it means the search is bookmarkable. So if you, for example, if you were looking at the 50 expedition, and you would look, instead of having to go to the long search every day and continuously press refresh and hoping your QSO is going to come up, you can bookmark the search, bookmark the content of the search, and just go back to it each day. Equally, we can look up the full details for the QSO. At the moment I'm not spending time, partly it's one of the reasons. But you can see the equipment I've used that's come from the equipment, definition at the top of the file, location, and it knows that's a latitude and longitude, so it should Google Maps. Bring up a Google map, in theory, of where I was operating from at that point. So that's one thing we can do with this. But if we had the entire set of data from everyone's QSOs available in this sort of format, there's potential to think about LOTW type systems for confirming QSOs without having to deal with the complexities of LOTW. Don't need to keep pair certificates, which have, I think, caused a lot of problems. But also, crucially, you control your own data. This QSO data is sitting on your web server. It isn't going to a centralized database of the ARRL where you can't ever access it, you can't ever delete any QSOs or anything like that. This is your data and you're keeping control of it, which is a very big idea at the moment in web technologies. So, let's imagine this system is working. You can say that you worked such and such station to the award body. The award body can then go and find out about that QSO from your website because it can predict the URL, it knows where it's going to find data in a readable format. Then it can go and look up against the person you contacted records, get their QSO record that reciprocates yours, and then it can say to you, yes, you worked at that station, and give you the credit for it. So there's potential here for actually doing some rather neat ideas for award schemes. The biggest problem in all this is how on earth the award server knows where to find the other person's QSO. Either you've got to have a central database which is knows for any given call sign where it can find the where the log information is stored. Probably the simplest idea, but we're trying to get away from this idea of having a central database in the middle. or alternatively we just sort of came to randomly crawl around the web looking for XDiff information. A couple of ideas, we need to think about what the possibilities are with this. Also, the idea that users control their own data might sound good, but it does have some disadvantages. First of all, if you start deleting QSOs that other people have claimed credit for, what are the implications of that? I'm sure people wouldn't like to see their DXCC honor roll suddenly taken away from them because they've lost a few QSOs because some idiot accidentally deleted the QSO somewhere. What if people change their web addresses? In theory, there's a general principle that any address on the web should be permanent, but it certainly doesn't always work like that. So what if people start changing where their log information is stored? And can we actually trust any data this way, done this way? What if people start uploading fake logs? There's a possibility we could do something linking to off-air recordings as computer technology improves and storage and bandwidth become less of an issue. But there's potential problems in all this. So there's a few things to think about. Yes, there are privacy concerns as well, which are a big part of this. At the moment, I'm only trying to look at the technology side of it, but we do have to think about this. From an IOTA point of view, because as I explained at the beginning, my main concern with all this is with the IOTA website. The way we would like this to be going, say in 10 years' time, is that users will be merrily typing in their QSOs into their logging program when they make them. The QSOs will then immediately be checked against Logbook of the World credits, because hopefully everyone is logging live straight into LOTW when they're making the QSOs by then, rather than uploading them sort of a couple months later. So it's immediately checked against LOTW, and that record, invisibly to the user, is immediately sent back to the IOTA server for saying this QSO has just happened. This means potentially the user can be merrily typing in their QSOs one day, and suddenly a box appears on their screen, you're now eligible for your IOTA 100 certificate. They click yes, okay, and then a few seconds later, a certificate falls out of their printer. This is perfectly feasible. Once we can get this sort of transfer of data across the web, we need to solve a small problem with LOTW we're working on to do this. But it would certainly make the program a lot simpler to administer if we were going down that route. So yeah, so there's lots of advantages, and hopefully it would reduce the large amounts of time that people are currently spending on award chasing, a lot of which seems to be unnecessary. So that's a general overview of where we're trying to go at the moment. Thanks very much for coming.